Well, it's good to see all of you here this morning. This is the last class of this particular quarter, and starting next Sunday, there'll be a new quarter. In here in the auditorium on Sunday mornings will be a class on the life of the Christian life, and there'll be various men who will be teaching that class. This will be the last time that we're together to look at this study of Bible background information to help us to come, hopefully, to a greater understanding of Scripture. And the final thing I want us to look at this quarter is just a study of the temple, and hopefully to help us to have a closer understanding as to when we read about the temple, perhaps what temple we're reading about, and also what maybe what parts of the temple might be in discussion in these various passages. When you read through the Bible, where's the first time that you read about the temple? Where do you first read about the temple in the Bible? We are overwhelmed with responses today. That was not intended to be a trick question. All right. There are three temples that we read about in the Bible, by and large, three temples. First temple was that of Solomon. Solomon was the one who built the temple back in the book of 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 8 is where he built and dedicated that temple. And why was David, his father, a man after God's own heart, why was David not permitted to build the temple? Because he was a man of war. And so God chose that David could help prepare the materials for that temple, but that Solomon would be the one to build it. So he started that in about the fourth year of his reign and took him 7 years to complete it. And it is a fascinating study, not one we're going to look at this morning, but to go and to look at the description of that temple and the detail that God gave not only for its construction, but also in its final look. The Bible is very descriptive as to how that temple looked. The dedication ceremony and the prayer of Solomon at the dedication of the temple, all of that is incredible to read over in 1 Kings and in 1 Chronicles. But what happened to that temple? Is it still standing today? You all are just, I think the lethargic nature, what is that chemical that's in Turkey that just, whatever you just said is what gets, y'all are still feeling that. What is Solomon's temple still standing today?
No.
All right, that was the easy question. What happened to Solomon's temple?
It was destroyed.
If it's not standing today, it didn't ascend into heaven or anything like that. It was destroyed. Who destroyed it?
Babylon.
Isn't all of this up here? See, I've had this up here for 3 minutes and 22 seconds, and y'all hadn't picked up on it yet. Babylon came in and destroyed the temple in 586 B.C. Well, I thought when we read the New Testament, don't we read about the temple? Solomon built the temple. Here was the temple that stood for about 400 years, a little less than that, and it was destroyed. And so God's people were carried away into Babylon, and Zerubbabel was the one who led the first group of God's people back from Babylon to the Promised Land. How long were they in captivity in Babylon?
70 years. 70
years. They were in captivity in Babylon from 70 years. That first wave of captives from Jerusalem was taken over to Babylon in 606 B.C., among whom was Daniel. And for 70 years, from 606, 70 years later, would get you to 536 B.C., when under Persian rule now, the decree of Cyrus came, and Cyrus the king decreed that the Israelites should go back to their home. They would be led by Zerubbabel. And in this first batch of those coming back, he led about 50,000 back. And the foundation of the temple was laid and the Persian government paid for it. How would you like that? For Cyrus to decree, not only do I send the Israelites back to the promised land, but we are going to give them the means by which they can reestablish their life, reestablish their religion. Can you imagine a government, a foreign government, financing a religion, God's religion, under Judaism? And so they rebuilt the foundation of the temple. Was Zerubbabel's temple as good as Solomon's temple? No. In Ezra chapter 3, when you read about Zerubbabel laying the foundation of the temple, what did the older folks do when the foundation was laid? They cried. They wept. They wept, one, because those who were older had seen Solomon's temple. And so there was no doubt a nostalgic, there was no doubt a sense of relief in seeing the temple foundation laid, but they also wept because while this temple was being built, and while the foundation was laid and going to be built, it wasn't anything, it did not compare to Solomon's temple. And so that was about 536 BC when that temple began. Solomon built his temple in 7 years. This temple, they laid the foundation, and then because of opposition, they stopped building. And you read about a period of about 16 years, about a decade and a half, where they stopped building completely on the temple because of the enemies threatening them. They just decided they'd stop. Until Haggai and Zechariah, two prophets, came along and said, "You all need to start building." And they did. And so it took about 20 years to get that temple completed. When you read through what we call interbiblical history, you read in that 400 years of silence between the Old Testament and the New Testament, this temple, Zerubbabel's temple, was again decimated by opposing armies coming in where they plundered the temple. And I don't know if you have heard of a guy by the name of Judas Maccabee or Maccabeus. This may be opening a can of worms. If you have seen Catholic Bibles or if you have seen copies of the Apocrypha, there are books included in there that are not inspired. They're not the 66 books that we have in our Bible, but there are additional books that they place in there, uninspired books called the Apocrypha. Two of them are 1st and 2nd Maccabees, historical writings for the most part. And Judas Maccabee was one of the historical leaders of this interbiblical period. And I only mention him because he was a part of, after the Zerubbabel's temple was devastated. He was a part of the rebuilding and the rededication of the temple. And on December 14th, 165 BC, almost 2 years to the day on which it was devastated, Judas Maccabee rededicated the temple of God. As a part of that rededication was the Feast of Lights, or as we would call it, the holiday of Hanukkah. Just in a few weeks, when the Jews begin to celebrate Hanukkah, the Feast of Lights, where there are 8 days, and they had a menorah then that had 8 lights, the feast was surrounded by the idea of the dedication and then the rededication in 165 BC, the rededication of the temple. And so here's the second temple that Zerubbabel built. It was partly destroyed, and then when the Roman general came in, Pompey, even more so. So that's two temples, Solomon's temple, Zerubbabel's temple. When we get to the New Testament, we've got Herod. We've got Herod the Great, who we talked about last week. Herod the Great came in, and while he was also a part of the destruction of this temple, he then became part of the beautification of this temple. And so Herod the Great came on the scene, and Herod the Great began to beautify and expand the temple, and took about a year and a half to rebuild the basic structure of that temple. Although the sanctuary itself took about 46 years to complete. Look in John chapter 2. Remember in John chapter 2 verse 19? John chapter 2 and verse 19, Jesus said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." John 2 and verse 19. What did the Jews say to him in verse 20? Are you serious? "Destroy this temple," John 2 and verse 19, "and in 3 days I will raise it up." Verse 20, how long do they say it took him to build the temple? 46 years. This took us 46 years to do, and you're going to rebuild it in 3 days. Verse 21, what temple was Jesus talking about? He's talking about his body. Here was one of the very earliest of Jesus' predictions and prophecies about his own death and his resurrection. And so here was a temple that was not fully completed with all of its outer courts until about 64 A.D. When was Herod's temple destroyed? 70 A.D. by the Romans coming in. So it only was in its final and completed stage for about 6 years before it was completely destroyed. So here's what I want us to do this morning. I want us to look specifically at Herod's temple and to see how it played into the life of Jesus and the life of the early Christians. And I don't know if you have in the back of your Bible a picture, an image of, if you've got maps in the back of your Bible, it's possible that you have an image, maybe a map of the temple. You may not. I'm hoping that this map will serve us. This particular diagram will serve us to have a greater understanding of the temple, where things took place, and how some of these things might be significant. Anytime you go looking for a model of the temple. And by the way, some of you just went up, what was it, last month? Went up to the Holy Land Experience up in Orlando. Some of you have been there before, where they have a model of the temple. And it's fascinating to see. Anytime you see one of those or see pictures, understand that these are, as with any artist conception, artist renderings, and sometimes they may not be perfectly aligned with the way that things actually were. But this one is fairly close. But here is the temple grounds, the entire area. Obviously, this building right here, the sanctuary, the house of God, this is the temple. In the Greek language, when you read the New Testament, we read the English word temple, and yet in the Greek New Testament, there were two different words that they used for temple. One of those words was specifically talking about this building, the sanctuary, the house of God itself. Look in Luke chapter 1 and verse 9 real quick. Look in Luke chapter 1 and verse 9. When you begin reading in the book of Luke, you have... Before you are introduced to Jesus, who obviously the Gospels are about, you're introduced to his forerunner in the book of Luke. You're introduced to John the Baptist. But first, before you're introduced to John, you're introduced to his parents. Look in verse 8 of Luke chapter 1. "So it was that while he," that's John's father Zacharias, Luke 1 and verse 8. Did I say that? Luke chapter 1 and verse 8. "So it was while he was serving as priest before God in the order of his division," I hope we have time to come back and talk about that, "according to the custom of the priesthood, his lot fell to burn incense when he went into the temple of the Lord." That word that's used there, naos, the Greek word, is talking about that specific structure. But sometimes when you read the word temple in the New Testament, It's not talking about that sanctuary specifically as much as it's talking about the entire temple grounds. And sometimes you just have to look at the context to be able to figure out which one it is talking about. But as a part of this temple grounds, a major area of this temple grounds was called the Court of the Gentiles. Now, the temple was a part of Judaism, was the center of Judaism. The temple was built for the Jews and for their use and for their purposes. Look at Acts chapter 21 while I'm talking about this. But as a part of this temple grounds, there was not only a place for the Jews to go, but there was also this courtyard, a very large area. And so it was kind of the common area for a large part, even for Gentiles to be able to come into the temple area. Look in Acts chapter 21. Acts chapter 21, Paul is in the city of Jerusalem at the end of the chapter. He is arrested in the temple area. We're going to come back to chapter 21 in just a minute. Look at verse 34. Acts chapter 21, verse 34. And some among the multitude cried one thing and some another. So when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him, Paul, to be taken into the barracks. When he reached the stairs, he had to be carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. For the multitude of the people followed after, crying out, "Away with him." Then as Paul was about to be led into the barracks, he said to the commander, "May I speak to you?" He replied, "Can you speak Greek? Are you not the Egyptian who some time ago stirred up the rebellion?" Paul said in verse 39, "I am a Jew from Tarsus." Verse 40, "So when he had been given permission, Paul stood on the stairs and motioned with his hands to the people, and he began to preach to them." And in chapter 22 is where Paul proclaimed and recounted his conversion to Christ. Those stairs up into the castle, sometimes called of Antonia, is probably up in this region where Paul had been. This is probably about right here in this corner of the temple grounds where Paul was arrested. He was taken to the barracks for his own safety initially, and those stairs are probably about right in this area. But then go to Acts chapter 3. You in Acts chapter 21, go to Acts chapter 3. We see this in the life of Jesus, but we're going to look at it just here in the life of the early church. In Acts chapter 3, we know that the lame man was healed, and we'll talk about him in just a minute. Acts chapter 3 and verse 11. "Now as the lame man who was healed held on to Peter and John, all the people ran together to them in the porch," which is called what? It's Solomon's. "They went to Solomon's temple," or Solomon's porch, which was a part of the temple grounds. Go to chapter 5. Look in Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5 and verse 11. "Great fear came upon all the church, upon all who heard these things. And through the hands," verse 12, Acts 5, verse 12, "through the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were done among the people. And they were all with one accord in Solomon's porch." Solomon's porch, and you can't see it very well on this image. Solomon's porch stood right in front of the main temple grounds. And this section here, we're going to blow this up in just a minute. We're going to expand it, zoom in on it. Blow it up is not a good word. It's already destroyed, but we're going to zoom in on this in just a minute. Right in front of the entrance into the main temple grounds is this area called Solomon's porch. And let me give you, this is not exactly an image, but it's pretty close. It was an area that had columns where the people could get into the shade and go back into it. Here's an image drawn by an artist of Jesus from John chapter 10. When Jesus was inside Solomon's porch and there was teaching. If that's what it looked like in Acts chapter 3 and in Acts chapter 5, this is where the early church was meeting. on occasion. Right there in front of the temple grounds, inside this area of a porch or a portico, depending on what translation you have, was this area of Solomon's porch. But around this main area, remember, here's the court of the Gentiles out in this courtyard, but you can see a very, what you would call a short wall. It's not very tall. There's some of these walls that are hundreds of feet tall, but surrounding this area was a very short wall, only about 4.5 feet tall. And it was that wall that separated the area where the Gentiles could go from the area where the Jews were permitted to go. Go back to Acts chapter 21. In Acts chapter 21, verse 27. Now when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seen in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd, and they laid hands on him. That's laying hands on Paul. Crying out, "Men of Israel, help. This is the man, Paul, who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place," against the temple. "And furthermore, he also brought Greeks," they claimed, "into the temple and has defiled this holy place." Now, were the Greeks allowed into the temple area? Well, they were allowed. Gentiles were allowed into the court of the Gentiles. But they were claiming that Paul had taken a Gentile inside the area that was not permitted for Gentiles. Look at verse 29. "For they had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian with Paul." Where did they see him with Paul? In the city. Had they seen him in the temple with him? The city's out here. Outside the major walls, they had seen Trophimus, the Greek, the Gentile, the Ephesian. They had seen him with Paul in the city. So they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple. How dishonest is that? Well, he must have been with him but we didn't see him. Paul had been with this Gentile, but this wall was not permitted to be passed. In fact, there were signs on this wall written in Greek and in Latin, saying that any Gentile who passed beyond that would be put to death. This is perhaps, and there are some who have thought this, this is perhaps what Paul might have had in mind in Ephesians chapter 2. Do you know in Ephesians chapter 2, when it talks about Jesus having died upon the cross, that Jesus broke down, he tore down, the middle wall of partition, the middle wall of separation. Separating who? Jews and Gentiles. And in that passage of Ephesians 2, verses 14 through 17, over and over it says that he came to make peace, he came to bring peace, he came to preach peace, and that he reconciled both Jew and Gentile into one body. And in verse 14 is where it talks about the fact that when Jesus died, it tore down that middle wall. Now, that was a figurative wall that separated Jew and Gentile that Paul was talking about in Ephesians chapter 2. But here was a physical wall that separated Jew and Gentile. When Jesus died upon the cross, was there any longer to be a separation, physical or figurative? No longer any separation. Let's zoom in on that area. Remember, here's this area where this wall separating the Gentiles from going in. Let's zoom in on that area and look a little bit closer at this particular region. Here in the very front, at the very entrance, here's the east gate. We'll talk about that in a minute. At the east gate, going into gate, you came first into the court of the women. It is entirely false to say that women were not allowed into the temple area. Now, they were allowed into the court of the women. They were not permitted to pass beyond this gate into the court of Israel that we'll talk about in a minute. But this was a very large area, about 233 feet square. and it's called the Court of the Women, or sometimes in John chapter 8, it's called the Treasury. But just because it's called the Court of the Women doesn't mean that only women were there. This was a very common area of gathering. In fact, some of these you see on the four corners of this particular area are some separate assembly rooms. One of these, well, that's not what I wanted. I'll get to that in a minute. One of these, this corner, I'll bring it up in a minute, was where it was believed. This Nazarite chamber is where it's believed that those who had fulfilled and concluded the Nazarite vow, that's where they were brought for the ceremonies that concluded that. And it's frequent that that the apostles came and were preaching in some of these chambers off of the Court of the Women. But this is where Jesus came. Look in, well, you don't have to look, but in Mark chapter 12. In Mark chapter 12, Jesus was in the treasury. And in this area of the treasury, there were 13 treasure boxes. Sometimes they're called boxes. There were 13 treasure boxes, but they were more like an inverted trumpet. If you want to look at, if you want to think about a trumpet or a horn, it was more of an inverted horn. And this is where the Jews came to do what? This is where they came to give their alms. This is where they came to give of their monies to the, for the support of the work of the temple. There were 13 different ones of these treasuries, these treasure boxes. Now, they're not. We have baskets that we pass as a part of our worship. They were not baskets that did not make any noise. They were not boxes that had padding on the bottom that did not make any noise. They are horns for the capturing of these dollar bills, $20 bills, $100 bills, coins. What happens when you throw coins into metal horns? Oh, it makes lots of noise. And if you give lots of coins, then what? Oh boy, I gave so much. Did you hear? You don't even have to see how much I gave. You can just hear how much I gave. Of course, some people living back then maybe they'd take their dollar coin down to the bank, get 100 pennies, you know. And so instead of giving $1 coin, clink, you know, that doesn't sound so impressive. But if I, you know, I'll go and give 100 pennies. Boy, it sounds like I'm giving a lot. Surely nobody did that. Surely nobody was going there so that people could see and hear how much they were giving. You know the story. When Jesus was there in the treasury, and a woman came and dropped two small copper coins. Oh, that doesn't make much noise, does it? She didn't give very much. She's kind of stingy, isn't she? I mean, all of these other people, they're giving so much money. And yet in Mark chapter 4, you read about this woman. She only drops two coins in there. What did Jesus say about her? She gave more than everybody else did. And so that was in the treasury. That was in the Court of Women where they came to give. Now, look in Acts chapter 3. In Acts chapter 3, Peter and John are making their way to the temple. What time of day is it in Acts chapter 3 and verse 1? They're going to the temple at the hour of prayer. It's the ninth hour. Acts chapter 3 and verse 2, a certain man, lame from his mother's womb, was carried, whom they laid daily at the gate of the temple, which is called Beautiful, to ask alms from those who are entering the temple. They're going into the Court of the Women. They're going into the treasury. They're going there to offer their alms. Now, if you were one of these people who stood by the interstate and was holding a sign that said, "We'll work for food, hungry, really, seriously, I'm serious about this, I'm hungry," or whatever your sign might say. If you knew where everybody was going to go at a certain time of day. If you knew that that's where they were going, and why were they going there? To give their alms. What does that mean they got in their pockets on the way there? They got money. It's not like the Boy Scouts where you can say, well, I'll give you something on the way out, and then they'll forget about it. You know, you go into the store, oh, I'll just give you something on the way out, and you can forget. They weren't looking for the people coming out of the store. They were looking for the people going into the store. They got money in their pockets. So this lame man was brought daily. Did he know where to go? Uh-huh. He had a business made out of this. He was laid at this beautiful gate, the gate called Beautiful, a gate that was 60 feet wide, 75 feet tall. You think about how wide that is. It's as wide as this auditorium, nearly. It's as tall as this auditorium is wide. Let me say it that way. That's a big gate. And everybody walked through that gate to go in, and there was that lame man who was laid there to offer his alms. But just beyond the court of women, just to the west, if you were to step into that next gate, and this is what I don't have a real good image of, was called the Court of Israel. Right inside that was the court of priests. Let me see if I can explain that a little bit better. Inside that gate, there was a narrow corridor that went, that was right inside this gate, but it also went down this side of the temple, and it also went down this side of the temple. So on three sides, and here you can almost see it's almost like a little porch over there, and down here is where the north side would be. And so this is where the men, the Hebrew men, were permitted to come inside this little porch area. And you can see it on this map a little bit better. Here's the court of women. Here's the court of priests. In this area right here was the court of Israel. The Israelite men were permitted to come into this area. There was a short wall that would separate them from the court of priests. And they were permitted to watch the priests doing their duties. Here is the altar where they would offer the animals, obviously. It is believed that the women, and again believed from just historical documents, it's believed that the women were permitted to stand right here at this gate when they brought their annual sacrifices, that they were permitted to stand at this gate and to watch the priests offer their sacrifices. Don't know about that. But here's the altar where the priests, inside the court of the priests, would offer those. And here's court of the Israel, porch area where they could watch. We're running out of time, so let me get inside. Let me get inside the temple itself. By the way, there were three-story apartments right over here along this side of the temple where the priests would stay. Go back to Luke chapter 1. I said I wanted to get back to this. Where the priests would stay when they came to perform their priestly duties. Even under David had separated the priests into divisions. And so when you read about Zacharias in Luke chapter 1, in verse 8, it says that he was serving as priest before God in the order of his division according to the custom of the priesthood, and his lot fell to burn incense. They only came and worked there, the priest did, on two-week rotations. They had a place where they would stay in some of these apartments close by for the priest. Let's very quickly get inside the sanctuary, the house of God itself, before we run out of time. When they came up to the temple, up here on the top, you can't see it here. Same thing we have on the top of some of our buildings today, except these were made out of gold. How do you keep birds from defiling the temple of God? You could put an owl up there, right? Golden spikes were put on top of this so that the birds would not land there and defile the temple. The priests, and only the priests, would walk up to the temple through this porch area. By the way, do we have time for this? By the way, when you get back to this altar and the entrance into the temple, Jesus said in Matthew 23, sometime go read Matthew 23, 35, that there was somebody that was murdered right there in Matthew 23, 35. All right, get back inside the temple. All right, so they would walk in through these gold doors into the holy place. This was modeled similarly after the tabernacle, except it was twice the size. When they walked into this holy place, here was a room that was 60 feet long, 30 feet wide. On the north end of this room, you can't hardly see it, here's a little table of showbread. On the south side of this room was the golden lampstand with seven torches. Right before the veil on the western side of the room was what? What was there before they walked into the most holy place? The basin. Here was the veil. A veil that was 20 feet tall, 60 feet wide. The veil was. The room was only 30 feet wide. Here was a veil that was 60 feet wide. It was said that this veil was a palm of a hand in thickness. 6 inches or the palm of a hand thick was that veil. And behind that veil was what? The Holy of Holies or the most holy place. A room in the temple that was 30 by 30. How often did the high priest go into that room? Once a year. When Jesus died upon the cross, Paul said in Ephesians 2 that middle wall of separation figuratively was torn down. Figuratively. But Matthew chapter 27 says that something literally happened in the temple when Jesus died. What was it? This veil that was 20 feet tall and said to be 6 inches or the width of a palm in thickness was torn from the top to the bottom. When Jesus died, that middle wall of separation between Jew and Gentile eliminated so that there was no longer any difference. They were all reconciled to God. But more importantly, even than that man could have fellowship with man and there were no longer barriers between that fellowship. More important than that was what literally happened to that veil. Because when that veil was torn, and now man was able to peer into the Holy of Holies, now everyone, Jew and Gentile, had access to God and had access to heaven because Jesus had died upon that cross. This building, this grounds, temple grounds, was very important to the Jews. But in AD 70, the Romans wiped it out. We no longer worship God in Jerusalem. We no longer worship God. We no longer have to worship God in a house made with hands. We're able to worship God in any city, in any building, or under any tree. You and I have access to that God in order that we might worship Him. There was a couple more things I wanted to get to. We don't have time. I hope this was helpful for us in getting a better grasp of the temple and how it played into that early church. Thank you so much for your good attention this morning.